This is Richie Incognito of the Buffalo Bills. You're listening to Locked On Bills, presented by Cover One.
All right, welcome to this special edition of Locked On Jaguars and Locked On Bills. We have a Locked On crossover here. I am your host, Zach Goodall. You can follow me on Twitter at Zach_Goodall. My absent co-host, Chris Thornton, was unfortunately involved in a small auto accident today. He is fine, but unfortunately he could not join us for what should be a great episode. But go ahead and throw him a follow at Misto Christofo, and also, of course, follow the Locked On Jaguars Twitter handle. I am joined by Locked On Bills and their host, Kevin Messer. Kevin, how are you doing, man?
Doing well today. Good to be on these crossovers. Really love these editions.
Yeah, these are always some of the best episodes. Try and give everyone a perspective from both sides. I'm sure Kevin will post this on the Bills one as well. So, Bills fans, you'll get my takes on the Jags, how you guys can beat us, how they can beat you. You know, go back and forth, try and give you the most info that you can get from both of these teams. So we'll go ahead and get right into it. You look at this Bills team, and when people look at the Jaguars and they immediately think the defense and what they can create, that's going to be hard for the Jaguars to do on Sunday. Not that, and this is just coming from when I've watched them a little bit, I don't see them as much of a like giant threat on all vertical, on all different parts of the offense, but at the same time, they aren't really the type of team that screams turnovers, which is what the Jaguars like to create. Is that right?
That's totally correct. It's interesting as they're two kind of similar style of teams in which the Bills, when Tyrod Taylor's under center, which he has been for 14 and a half games, they turned the ball over four times. So he actually, I think, has the NFL record right now with only turning it over to 1% clip. The turnovers aren't going to come from by way of Tyrod Taylor.
Right. That's what I looked at it. I was talking about it on my last episode. If anything, if the Jaguars want to win, they're going to have to pressure him just more into, you know, incompletions and not being able to move the ball, but actually getting him to turn the ball over. And always with Shady McCoy, as long as he's able to play this upcoming weekend, I would figure it is going to be hard for them to create, in which case, if the Jaguars want any chance of winning, they need, I'd figure, to get their run game going. I don't expect too much out of Blake Bortles against a pretty solid secondary you guys have.
Yeah, one thing that really, which is interesting to get into right away, is the statistics defensively, at least, do not tell the Bills' story.
Right.
Some of their yardage totals are inflated by Tom Brady, by a really poor game in L.A. against the Chargers, and against New Orleans when Drew Brees came to town. Other than those, the Bills have been really, really solid in the secondary. I have a defensive rookie of the year candidate between him and Lattimore and Tre'Davious White. Mm-hmm. And then you have E.J. Gaines, who's been a real, real solid, solid top 20 corner, according to PFF, a guy that they acquired with a second-round pick for Sammy Watkins, who's been just beyond what Bills fans could ever imagined. And then two safety combination, two Pro Bowl safeties, and Jordan Poyer and Mika Hyde, who actually were the weakest part of the Bills unit last year. Now the safeties are the Bills' strongest in the entire team. So it is interesting that their D-backs, I mean, it's going to show a pass defense of maybe 20th to 22nd, but they're inflated. They've been ahead in a lot of games when David Fale threw for 300 meaningless yards last week and some of that kind of stuff, which does inflate those yardage totals. But more importantly, the story's being told, you know, what happens inside the red zone or inside the 40. That's really where the Bills start to buckle down. They've actually stopped four game-winning drives, one by Alex Smith, one by David Fales last week, which isn't huge, but one by actually Matt Ryan, that all of those turned into interceptions. So, I mean, they really, really, really buckle down as you get to your 40-yard. It's a Bills 40-yard line.
Definitely. That's one thing I've looked at with this team, like you said, how they gave up to David Fales at the same time. It's weak. It's David Fales.
Yeah, exactly.
It's David Fales in a meaningless game at that point. I like Trey White. I liked him a lot when he was coming out. I had him as a first-round prospect. I felt he got slept on with the guys, obviously, up at the top in Lattimore and Gary and Conley, Marlon Humphrey. And when you guys grabbed him, it was at 27, right, after the trade back?
Yeah, 27, and with him and a first-round pick for next year. So, yeah. The Bills made out quite well with that one.
That's what I was thinking. Yeah, I really, really like White. And like you said, with the safeties as well, Hyde and Poyer. but putting them together, it's going to be really hard for Blake Bortles to do anything. But in order for this Jaguars offense to move the ball, they like to depend on the running game. How do you see Leonard Fournette faring against this front seven?
Yeah, that's the big question. I mean, I'll turn it over to, when I'm finished, I'll turn it back to you with, you know, kind of Leonard's mindset. I know he's made some comments where he doesn't like playing in the cold. They're getting hit in the cold, and it's supposed to be pretty chilly down there in Jacksonville, from what I'm hearing. But the Bills front seven isn't the strongest. You do have some solid players there. You know, Preston Brown can bring it. I mean, you have Kyle Williams. Jerry Hughes is one of the better edge players in the league. We're actually missing probably one of our better run defenders. We're really one of the Bills' only major injuries was Shaq Lawson, their first round pick from last year, where many thought would be more of a pass rush specialist. Actually turned more into a run stopping specialist. And since he's been on IR, the Bills have been absolutely crushed, most notably by Deion Lewis in two games. Deion Lewis got the best of the Bills. But, you know, it's really inconsistent. There's some games where they'll show up against Kareem Hunt and stop him for 20 yards or less total yardage. And then, you know, they played Kenny and Drake fairly well for him being basically their workhorse in two of their, you know, they played him twice here at the end of the year. They played two out of 3 weeks in a game where the Dolphins were still alive week 15 when Jay Collar, they still had a very shot at their playoff berth. They ended up losing here in Buffalo. But so you're going to see an inconsistent Bills team. I do believe what they did against the Chiefs is really, really good to turn on as a Jags fan, to see kind of what the Bills will do game plan wise. They're just going to go straight out and sell out the run and tell Alex Smith to beat him. And he wasn't able to. And I do believe you'll see the same thing here against Blake Bortles.
Yeah, and if anyone's telling Blake Bortles to beat them, we all know how that goes. Yeah, I bet.
And so to turn it back to you with Leonard Fournette, you know, how has he been, you know, post some of his a few of his injuries, and you know, and how do you anticipate him being, this is first real, you know, on a large scale performance for him? It's a lot on Fournette, in my opinion. I mean, if he comes out and gives it and brings it, it could be a long day for the Bills. But if he kind of mails it in, or it's cold, or, you know, any of the all the above, or the Bills, you know, he's not able to find running room, and, you know, it could be, you know, reversely a really good game for the Bills. So, you know, kind of what's your opinion on what you expect to see from Fournette, you know, and what you've seen lately?
That's exactly how I viewed it. It has been really cold in Jacksonville. It's been total cold front, and I can tell you, I used to live in Pittsburgh, so I thought I knew what cold was. But I've lived here for 11 years, and I don't anymore. And I can tell you, it is terrible. It is terrible down here. It is supposed to be a little nicer by Sunday. It's supposed to get up 58 to 60, so it should be a little bit better. But you brought up Leonard Fournette, and he's been dealing with injuries throughout the year. Back around the time when he went off against Pittsburgh is when he had more of that ability to cut. He seemed completely injury-free. He was a lot more dynamic as a runner, not only running people over, but more agile. And we've seen that in bits and pieces throughout the year. He started to regain that against Seattle, and then he dealt with some more nagging injuries after that. I think he started to get it back a little bit slowly, but surely last week against Tennessee, being cold, he had a better game, but the offense was relatively stalled. If he is 100%, then I think he should be good, in which case this Jaguars team, with the defense that they have and the running game when it's at its peak, is ultimately there to disguise Blake from making mistakes. And when they were all clicking, like on all cylinders against Seattle, Blake actually ended up having so much pressure off his back that he was making throws I've never seen him make before. So when the team is in like complete total unison, like they were against Seattle and the Colts in Houston, that 3 week stretch, it's really hard for even like the top teams to beat them. So if they can find that against the Bills, I really wouldn't be too worried about the Bills coming here and beating them. At the same time, if they aren't all clicking and the Jaguars can't come up on a lead early, and in fact rather it goes the Bills' way early, I see no chance for them to bounce back, because that's a position where you ask your quarterback to take charge, and Blake Bortles in 4 years hasn't done that once.
Yeah, and to kind of couple off that, I firmly agree with that, and it's interesting the Bills actually play that style of football to where the Bills get a lot of leads, so don't be shocked to see a Bills take a lead. They took a lead against New England. You'll see a lot of leads in Buffalo. They play a really solid game of football in the first and second quarter. Don't know what it is or why. they come out with their, it's kind of reverse of like, you know, maybe how New England will do it. They'll come out and show their best stuff. They'll give you it, give it all to you. Try to get that lead. Try to get LeSean McCoy going so that you can, they'll play a really time of possession style of football in the second half. That's a Rick Dennison specialty where you'll see them really do whatever they can to grind out 10 yards per three downs. You know, no more, you know, they don't want 20 yards. They want 10. So you'll start to see that style of football as the Bills will gain a lead. And they have in many, many games where you'll see them go up. And then they'll just say, hey, quarterback, beat us. Tom Brady can beat you. Other quarterbacks they've played can take advantage of some of that, those matchups. They did it, you know, they've done it pretty exclusively here in the second half of the year. Well, they'll take a lead on the first drive, and they'll try to let your quarterback make a mistake. That's the, how the Bills play football, and they have talented enough defensive backs to where that's kind of what they're, you know, that's how they've gotten to where they are. Some of the stats are misleading in terms of, well, how are the Bills not even 9-7, or how they make the playoffs outside of some ridiculous Tyler Boyd catch. They've played a really good style of turnover football where they're going to really sell out for turnovers. They're going to punch the ball every single second they can from any of your receivers or running backs. So you'll see that quite frequently. So they're going to do those kind of things to win the game, to kind of make up for a little bit of the lack of offensive talent. They're getting Kelvin Benjamin a little bit more involved, their receiver they've traded a third round pick for right at the trade deadline. He's playing on like a knee and a half right now. But he's still a commanding force that you can just kind of toss the ball way up in the sky, and at worst it goes incomplete.
Right. And we'll talk a little more with Buffalo's offensive weapons. Let's start with LeSean. We know that he got carted off the field this past week, and it looked a little more major at the time than it seems to be right now. But as the week has gone on, even in practice, he had to end up leaving early, I think is what I saw today. Can you go over a little more of what you know and how he, like, what his status might end up being for Sunday?
So he finally spoke today for the first time since the injury. So LeSean, you know, he's got that running back diva in him, in which, and I shouldn't ever shortchange anybody's injuries, but where there's many, and I'm not speaking this one specifically, but there's games when he'll be on the ground for an extended period of time, and you're like, oh boy, the Bills are in trouble here. But you'll see him pop back up and literally play in the two plays later. So he has that in him to where, you know, if he's feeling anything nagging or hurting him at all, he'll act and make it seem major, which is fine. So you saw that this week where he got carted off. So once the cart came out, you're like, oh man, this one might be actually serious. And immediately, you know, reports were right away negative. He came out today and said, you know, he just felt a lot of pain, but got some really, really good use. He's walking around fine without a limp, with flip-flops on. That's kind of the thing going around the Bills locker room right now, that boot has been much shed. And you, I 100% do think you see LeSean active on game day in the game. The real question that none of us will be able to answer is, you know, is he playing at 50%, 75%, 90%, or which percentage? And maybe we'll have a clear answer on Saturday or as more reports come out. But right now, I do think you'll see him suit up. He was fully, you know, dressed. And I think the Bills, with their best player specifically in this game, they're gonna, I mean, you know, you're going to get him not telling the truth up there. You know, you got to style it in Sean McDermott to where he comes from the school of, he's not going to give you anything. He's not going to be the most truthful person. The Bills are used to like Rex Ryan for a couple of years, where he'd come out and tell you everything.
Right.
Right now you're getting a guy that Sean McDermott, who's going to go out there and he's going to do whatever he can in the Bill Belichick school of, I don't know, I'm not saying anything. You never know really what's going on inside that. That's kind of how he's been all year.
That's Doug Marrone to a T as well. And I'm sure you know that from Doug Marrone's days up there, but, and I'm sure we'll get more into Marrone as well as Marcell Dareus in a bit. If LeSean McCoy either isn't active in some completely different turn of events or is very much limited, if this comes down to worst case scenario for Buffalo, what are they doing then with the run game after that? Or are they just full-blown trusting Taylor to go out and win the game at that point?
I think it could be interesting where you're going to see a real change of role. You're going to go to Marcus Murphy load like you've never seen or anyone's ever seen in their life. He's just some random guy off of a practice squad that we liked a lot against, you know, Miami was able to really stack the box and really stop McCoy. That's kind of their specialty, but they get crushed in the air. And you'll see that last week when they stacked the box against McCoy and then went, you know, the Bills obviously McCoy went out, and then they went with Murphy, who was able to find some running room and looked okay. Had a 5 yard per carry, and you got 40 rushing yards, and someone that, you know, Bills fans have been looking for this backup running back. They could have found off of a practice squad. He spent some time in New Orleans. So that's what they're going to do. They're not going to change. They're going to keep giving the ball to Marcus Murphy. If he's really, really, really ineffective, I really start to think you see some zone reads and some Tyrod Taylor runs. That's going to be the game plan. I think you're going to see Tyrod. It's the big buzzword here in Buffalo right now, where everyone's just saying, for a while, everyone was like, we want Tyrod to be a throwing quarterback. And now we're like, wait. Now we want those 700 rushing yards back. We want Tyrod to run the ball, because it's just hard to stop. I mean, you've seen him shake Von Miller. You've seen him shake the best defensive ends in the league. Mm-hmm. You want to see Tyrod Taylor run the ball. That's when he makes him dynamic. That's when the passing game opens up. So you'll see some combination of Tyrod running to make up for LeSean, and you'll see Marcus Murphy, and then you'll still see some inside runs with Mike Tolbert on top of it. Might be finally time. It's the last gasp. It might be finally time that Tyrod's back there airing it out, as he's done in other opponents, and as he's done against premier talent like Seattle. He'll stand back there and throw just in rare occasion.
Yeah. Well, pretty much covering, for the most part, their offense and defense there. I'll ask you a little bit about, like, what the opinion seems to be around Buffalo with Marone and how he left, Marcel being gone. And then after that, we can kind of flip it to where you can start asking a lot more to me with the Jags, sure, to try and get all that. But I'm sure that Buffalo, a lot of fans are looking at this as, oh, this is Doug Marone. Like, let's go kick some ass today, this weekend, because this is Doug Marone, the guy that walked out on us. Kind of give me and Jaguars fans a feel for how Buffalo fans really feel and how Marone is perceived as a whole in the area.
I would say he's not perceived very well around here. Right. Basically, we had a very wealthy owner coming in by the Bills. It wasn't like someone that wouldn't give coach all the tools that they needed to succeed. And right off the bat, he utilized a really weird opt-out clause and able to opt out. He thought he was going to get the Jets job, is by all accounts what the rumor was. So after 2 years and after going 9-7, missing the playoffs by, tiebreaker or a game or something, did walk out on the team. And it is felt in the locker room. I mean, you'll feel players like Eric Wood, Richie Incognito, a couple of our offensive linemen, really. That's really where the Bills have faced less turnover. So that some of these guys have been around Marone. And that's where they're basically saying, we don't forget this. I mean, it's not perceived very well in the locker room. It's perceived as a coach that just quit on his team in a time where they were developing. They were, he coached them to 9-7 football.
With
he
Kyle,
got a lot out
with
Kyle, exactly. Yeah. They got a lot out of him. I mean, it's no doubt. I mean, he's doing the same thing he's doing with Blake Bortles, pretty much, that you're seeing that he did out of Kyle Orton. And everyone thought the future was bright. And Pegula, the Bills owner Terry Pegula, basically said, we want you throughout the 5-year contract that you signed. And he was able to, take his full year of pay, which is like $3 or $4 million. Think he was going to get the Jets job, ended up, obviously going down there in Jacksonville to being a coordinator.
Right.
Another interesting note there is someone also not liked here very much is Nathaniel Hackett, a guy that did not perform very well in Buffalo and was not looked at very highly, or we were very happy to lose him as a coordinator. So maybe we can get into that in a minute. Your kind of opinions there, but he's not looked at very well. The public doesn't like him. He's a quitter. He's a real weirdo in a lot of sense. He'll start talking about weird things, and he was doing that up here in press conferences, including calling himself Saint Doug. So he did some things up here and before he quit that, he basically crowned himself for going 9-7. So he did some things that, Bills fans are like, what are you doing? We still have this playoff drought. We're not even in the tournament. What are you gloating about? And he ended up quitting, and the rest of the story there.
Right.
So I would say he's not looked at too highly. So we'll flip that script back to you after we, finish up the Bills stuff.
Yeah. That was the weirdest thing when he ended up here, is that he doesn't have that personality, at least here. And I totally believe that he did in Buffalo, because I remember the Saint Doug very well, because even I questioned that at the time. I was like, what?
Yeah, it was weird.
It was weird. Once we go over the Jags, we can get into more about how he and Hackett have been here as well. But I mean, if you want to start, go ahead. Anything you want to know about this Jags team, feel free to go ahead and shoot some off.
Yeah, we'll start at a cross here. Quickly touch on Marshall Darius. I'll give him a note on a Bills front, and then you can, we'll start there. You know, Marcell Dareus was has had the most up and down career of any player that I've ever seen, you know, at least in a Bills uniform, to where very beloved, a guy that earned everything he got, was thought of to be, you know, one of the top of that really, really good draft class, you know, which, you know, had AJ Green and Patrick Peterson and many other players. The Bills actually rewarded him with Doug Whaley and gave him a $100 million contract, much of what they're still eating to get him down there in Jacksonville, and played a really good football in 2014 under, you know, Doug Marrone, you know, 10 sacks down there, and Jim Schwartz, which is, you know, we'll get into, you know, as you start to talk about Marrone a little bit, but a lot of people who really, really do miss Jim Schwartz, you know, someone that, you know, Doug Marrone was paired with at the time. But, you know, since then, he's really fallen off a cliff. He's had a bunch of drug problems. You know, he's probably a drug incident away from probably, I think it's an entire year suspension. He's already had his 8-gamer. So I think he'd face an entire season suspension, if not an indefinite suspension, depending. He's always on his like 4th or 5th. Checked into rehab late last year, you know, to start the preseason. So you can't blame the Bills for trading him, and I can't blame the Jaguars for taking him. He's such a talented player. So I'll flip it over to you and say, what have you seen from his, you know, his 9 games, 20 tackles, 1 sack that he's done down there in Jacksonville? You know, we'll start with him, you know, kind of what it, he's in a rotational role, but, you know, tell us a little bit more about what he's done since the trade deadline.
He's grown into his role. He started off slow. I think he had less than 10 snaps in his first game, but it was right out the gate. You could tell that he was going to help this run defense, and they're right now ranked for as great of a defense as they've been. They're ranked 21st against the run as a whole on the season. But before Dareus got here, they were ranked 32nd. So in the, what is it, I think 9 games that they've had him in, they have flipped a switch more against the run. He's getting a lot more snaps. Avery Jones has always been better as a pass rushing nose tackle versus against the run. That's never been a strong suit of his. So Dareus has been getting a lot of time playing against the run. And he, even though his stat line won't really show for it, he has been making a lot of plays. He has been forcing the run to whenever it's trying to shoot his gap, he does force it back to the other side. And at that point, Calais Campbell, the 6'8", 300-pound monster, is just there to there to eat it up. So his presence has been felt across the defensive line. The thing I worry about with him is that although he is playing nose tackle, he can also play 3-technique, and they have a Pro Bowl 3-technique in Malik Jackson. And this is more future view. I'm curious to see who ends up getting the pay cut, because I don't know how much they're going to want to invest that into their interior, because like you said, Dareus is on a big deal. You guys are eating a lot of it, but I'm, from what I've checked, and I don't know all the numbers on it, I know Jacksonville is supposed to either take some over or whether they restructure him. I'm not sure what they're planning on doing, but Jackson's on a 5-year, $90 million deal too. So I'm curious to see how it'll end up working out, but as far as I'm concerned with how he's done so far, he's really grown into his role well. He seems to enjoy it here, which that was a thing with Marrone, because there was some beef between him and Marrone when Marrone left, if I'm relatively sure, and they seem to be doing just fine ever since he got here. So I don't know if they've just gotten past that or something like that. I don't know.
Yeah, there was a little bit of beef there. You know, that's the problem. He's beefed with everyone. He had some beef with, you know, Rex Ryan, who's a really very, very player-friendly coach.
Yeah.
Basically, Rex has stopped doing drugs. Like, we need you on this team. Stop smoking weed. We know, you know, whatever your opinion on it is, we really need you to be active. And, you know, you've already faced a few suspensions. Like, we're going to need you to go to, you know, rehab. You know, so he does, for you guys, he does come in carrying, you know, cap, something that I'm, you know, very in tune with. He does come in carrying an 11.5 next year for you guys. Mm-hmm. So it's going to be a really tricky situation where you can, I believe he's only going to carry a $2 million dead cap,
right?
So he's going to be a situation to where you guys, you have, it's the powers in you with you, with what you want to do with him. You only really gave up a 5th round pick now that you've made the playoffs. You know, is he just a guy you needed to make a playoff push, or is he a guy you're, if he doesn't take a restructure, you let go? I mean, you're the options are totally there. And to continue on with the run defense, you know, talk to me a little bit about the run defense. It's the biggest hot topic here ever. Tell us about, you know, the run defense in general. It can't just be Marcell Dareus's and his, you know, 20 to 30 snaps a game that improved your run D. So, you know, tell us what's going different.
No, I think once Dareus got here and they started clicking together, they all got better. If there's any real liability on that base four right now, if you're including Dareus in there at the nose tackle position, it's Yannick Ngakoue. And they do have help from their linebackers. I mean, I would consider Telvin Smith and Miles Jack to seriously already be up near not the best linebacker duo in the league at all, but certainly working their way there. And Telvin has certainly proven that in the fact that he got a big-time extension for a weak side linebacker as well. So they have help. I think they've all grown together, and they're shooting gaps better from the back two at the linebacker position, which they run, I think it's like a 70 to 75% majority nickel. So you'll see a lot more of a two linebacker set than a three linebacker set. But I think they've all, Campbell has been fantastic in every aspect of the game that you could ask him to be, whether he's playing outside, whether he's playing inside, whether he's going as a pass rusher, whether he's defending the run, he's been great. Jackson's been great. It was really up the middle of the field, against wherever Avery Jones really was before Darius got there, that they were really struggling. And they still have their moments, and there's a joke that goes around with the Jaguars is that they can't defend the backup running back. In which case, you guys, if McCoy doesn't play, you guys might be in luck, because it's just, there's, it's some weird curse. They can never defend the backup running back. It happened against Los Angeles, the Chargers, with, I think his name was like Eckler. I never heard about him before in my life until that day. And suddenly he went out, he scored two touchdowns as a receiving back, but nonetheless, he was making plays that Melvin Gordon wasn't playing, making that entire, in that entire game. Carlos Hyde was kept in check against the Jaguars, but I think it's Matt Breida. I'm not good with pronouncing names, whatever. He was the one that was producing out of that backfield. So it's, I don't know what it is. I don't know if it's just a lack of game planning for whatever could be thrown at you. But if it's McCoy, he's good. I expect him to play well, but I think they can keep him somewhat in check as they've grown throughout the entire season. I'm just naturally worried because I'm a hypothetical person that if Murphy gets onto the field, I don't know if they're going to have game plan enough because they haven't proven that they do that.
Yeah, no, it's a big deal. And I think that's it's weird. It's never really talked about, so it's funny you mention it. And I think it's a trend across the NFL where the backup running back gets, and it happens to the Bills all the time with these. Like Kenyon Drake's a perfect example, a guy that's, you know, back, you know, now a starter, but, you know, when he was a backup to Jay Ajayi, you know, still was tearing it up, and I couldn't believe wasn't getting more carries until, you know, they were able to trade Jay Ajayi. And it happened to the Bills with the, you know, the Jets with, you know, they have their Matt Forte, Bilal Powell combination. They start a different one each game. You know, neither of them are, you know, perfect running backs, but whatever one didn't start always goes off. So I think it is something to do with game planning where, hey, we got to stop McCoy. We don't really know who Marcus Murphy even is or what kind of runner he is, but, you know, he can't beat us because he's Marcus Murphy. You know, the next thing you know, Marcus Murphy's at 80 yards and two touchdowns, or, you know, in Austin Eckler or whoever it is. You know, I think that there is some credence there. So, you know, another question, we'll stay on the defense, you know, for now. How it looks like everything's in Jacksonville's favor. Their stats are through the roof. You know, they're ranking top six in a lot of categories. And it's kind of the reverse with the Bills, where you see a lot of 26th, 29th, but they play better than that.
Right.
Are the Jags as good as their top six in most categories? Or what? Tell me why these stats make them look like, and a lot of their, some of their advanced statistics make it look like, you know, they're a 13-3 team. Tell me what's gone wrong. Like, why the only 10-6 record? What's kind of gone against them, even though they do carry some gaudy numbers?
I can tell you that almost every aspect of this defense is legitimate at this point. And I think that's something that I've made a point throughout the season, is that what's great about this pass defense is that literally every aspect of it is reliable. You could either say, hey, we want you to be aggressive from the pass rush, and if that's what the game plan calls for, they're going to sack you at least five times and your quarterback's not going to see the light of day. If they're more saying that they want to contain, they've got the secondary, especially the Boye signing. People will still underrate it. He has been phenomenal and worth every penny, as well as Ramsey has come along into his own, and he's more of the physical, like, I will get, everyone knows he likes to get into their head, but the athlete, the playmaker, the, even though Boye has more picks, it's more Ramsey is the true playmaker. Whereas Boye is more of the technician, more of his, like, calm and collected, not as much get into your head, more just, you know, he's advanced in everything he does. His big thing throughout the entire offseason, anytime you heard him in an interview, anytime he was talking about practice, he would say the word technique, working on my technique, at least two or three times in an interview. And I think we've seen to that point to where you can bounce off these two corners, and they're polar opposites of each other, and they mesh together so perfectly that it's hard to consider who's the number one out of the both of them. But back to my point of it being is that you could either tell the pass rush, be aggressive and they'll do it, or tell the pass rush to contain and let the secondary handle it, and they can do it. So those two aspects, obviously, in the pass protection, I mean, in the pass defense game, is it's been remarkable, and the growth has been, it's been fantastic. I think it really does come down to being Blake Bortles. And his stats look better this year than they have in years past. They do. He's cut down on turnovers, interception percentages. He threw the ball a little bit less this year, but he still, it was, I think it was actually exactly 50-50. They ran the ball 527 times, and they threw the ball 527 times, which is a lot more carries this year compared to years past, which is a big change. But it's taken the pressure off of him to really, like, turn, like, get a lot more of those negative stats that we've seen in the past. But he's still not good. If you know what I mean, he had that three-game stretch where he looked like a totally different quarterback, and no one really knew what was going on, because it wasn't just that he was putting up these numbers against bad defenses, and you could say, oh, they're bad defenses, who cares? It was actual, like, throws that we hadn't seen. I mean, we were shocked to see that he threw a spiral. and he did it consistently in those couple of games, and we thought, this is what a good quarterback actually looks like. It was only really that three-game stretch that we could say that he played well this season. He's had games where he's been fair. He's had games where he's been bad. And you'll see it where it's some of these simple throws that they just come out errant. They come out wobbly. They don't go where they need to go. I mean, against Tennessee, he had two interceptions. One of them, he got absolutely drilled. The backup left tackle, Josh Wells, is no good. I don't think there's any chance Cam Robinson doesn't play. But if he does not play and Josh Wells is in there, then I'm going to go ahead and say the Bills won, because he will allow the most pressures you've ever seen. And he let Bortles get rocked on his first interception, but his second near the end of the game, he just threw it up with no plan whatsoever, even though they had time, they had a timeout. They were able to move down the field if they needed to, and when he feels that he needs to take control of a game, the game is over. So with as great of a defense as they have, with as solid of a run game as they have, and they wished it could have been better, Fournette was very good but bothered by injuries throughout the year, and they weren't able to produce nearly as much without him being on the field. But as long as Blake Bortles is there, there's something that is going to hold the team back.
I guess that's a really good point. So, looking at this matchup and really dissecting it a little bit more, as we'll transition to the offense now for the Jaguars. What's the issue? Like, what's kind of holding him back? Is it just straight up Blake Bortles? I noticed your offensive line doesn't hold very strong statistics. Even Robinson himself isn't rated very well on PFF. So talk to me about the O-line. Tell me a little bit more about the offense in general, maybe outside of Bortles.
The thing with the offensive line is that it's been people wanted to take, because no one in Jacksonville likes to admit that they don't have a quarterback yet. It's been too long since they have had at least a decent one, so fans are in denial. I can't blame them. I really can't, after Gabbert and now Bortles. But one thing that they like to do in years past is say, oh, his offensive line is terrible. Like, he can't do anything when he's constantly getting sacked. He was getting sacked a lot in years past. At the same time, when you actually went and watched the offensive line, it wasn't great, but it was at least league average and pass pro in anything you could find last year. He was given, I think, the 23rd most amount of time to throw from the pocket. So he was playing, he was facing relatively clean pockets. His sack numbers were down last year, and they're down to a league, not league leading, but it's right. Actually, it might be league
it's
leading.
Close. Yeah.
It's close at only 24. The pass protection is good. Cam Robinson, he started his rookie year looking like a top 10 tackle across the NFL. It sounds like me as a fan is exaggerating that, but I will be honest with you when I say his first seven games were that good. He then was taken out of the Colts game earlier in the year by an ankle injury that he was brought back for. He didn't miss a game from it. He was put right back in. They did have a bye week in between, but he was brought right back in, and you could tell for the next 3 or 4 weeks that it was not good. And it didn't help that in those 3 or 4 weeks, he went up against Joey Bosa and Melvin Ingram in one game, Myles Garrett in another, and some other solid pass rushers. So he was starting, at one point, I think he had allowed 16 pressures in 3 games, and suddenly everything was downhill from there. He started to recover from the ankle injury. He looked a lot better against Seattle and when he was back out there. And then he started to suffer again from an abdomen injury that he was actually held out of this past week to be sure he was good for the playoffs. When he's at full health, he does look like that franchise, like, building block left tackle, a really, really good pass protector and getting better and better against the run. But his health has been his main concern, and if his abdomen injury isn't 100%, you might be able to take advantage of that.
Yeah, that's an interesting point. And then, as you mentioned, if it's bad enough where you have to play Josh Wells, that's even worse of a scenario. So, you know, it's one that the Bills, I'm sure, are watching very closely, as, you know, that's Jerry Hughes' assignment, and that's probably the Bills' best individual. Although he only has four sacks, don't let that fool you. He's a very solid football player. You know, he's fairly underrated for what he's able to do, as he's always the top of, you know, pass rush numbers and advanced statistics and hurries and whatnot. So that is one that the Bills are watching very closely. And, you know, that's, you know, one of the few at this point, I will say, that, you know, are in pro Bills favor, as there aren't many. I mean, there's a lot of matchups that are pro Jacksonville. In a lot of ways, and even more so if LeSean McCoy doesn't suit up, you know, one that the Bills would try to take advantage of. They're going to play more conservative. You're not going to, you know, so if, you know, Jacksonville is getting to the quarterback, Tyrod Taylor takes sacks, he's not going to throw it. He's not going to put it into coverage. He's going to play a conservative style. You're going to see draws. You're going to see, you know, stretch runs. You're going to see zone reads. You're going to see Joe Webb come in for some wildcat if they have to, as it was fairly effective against New England, who, you know, never seems to game plan against stuff like that, but can always stop your best player. So it's interesting. So you'll start to see some goofy stuff like that. And I think, you know, the Bills really have nothing to play for. I mean, they've ended their playoff drought. They're on the road. They weren't even expected to be at this point. And so I always hate when that happens against the Bills. You know, when you see a team that's got, you know, I don't want to say doesn't deserve to be there. They beat the right opponents. They're there at 9-7. They do have a lot of advanced statistics that are in their favor that are more than just looking at yardage totals. However, they're going to go out there with, you know, kind of playing backyard football and doing whatever they can against a good defense to, you know, catch them off guard. That's the name of the game here, to be honest. I mean, that's what they're going to do. So it's just how well can Jacksonville play against that style? Because you're going to see lots of goofy run plays. You're going to see potentially a third string quarterback go in for a couple of plays and do a couple things and even be able to throw it, as he won a game against Indianapolis when the Bills were out Peterman and Tyrod Taylor for one game. So you're going to have a guy that can come in the game and actually make the throw that he needs to throw. So you don't think he's not going to just run it. So, you know, give me some things that, you know, Bills fans can take away saying that's why the Bills would have won this game. So if there's a reason the Bills do, you know, come down there and pull off an upset, why would that be?
I think it's going to be that secondary. I really do. With what you said, I mean, that safety tandem is a very good to great safety tandem. 10 interceptions in between your two safeties, I think that'll tell you a lot, especially when Blake Bortles is going to try and air it out. His receivers are young. Allen Hurns is back from an injury, and I think he will play a much-needed possession type of role. But Keelan Cole has been great for an undrafted guy. He's averaging over 17 yards per reception, and he's able to extend the field. And D.D. Westbrook as well. I don't think they've used him as well as they should. When D.D. Westbrook, if you are playing off man against him, or even a zone coverage where you aren't pressing him at the line, he will beat you with his speed no matter what. They just can't get Bortles to connect with him on those types of deep routes. He's only connected with him on a deep route once this year. And what do you know? D.D. Westbrook dropped it in what would have been a surefire touchdown. So, of course, that's just very Jaguars-y. But besides the point, they have young receivers who you would think, okay, this is their first playoff game. They don't have that type of experience. Like, I'm not expecting much. If those guys can turn it on, they can. At the same time, if Blake's going to start airing it out to these guys, you guys have the secondary that can stop him. Trey White being one of my favorites. I really do think he's going to end up being a top-tier corner for you guys, especially. A great replacement for Stephon Gilmore. Being gone in free agency, obviously, this past year, that safety tandem, and EJ Gaines as well. All in all, you guys, if you guys can start creating from your secondary, then get that lead at the start, and it's your guys' game at that point.
Yeah, it's a 2017 team that's actually built from the back up in terms defensively, where, you know, Sean McDermott is going to, and you can tell me how is Blake Bortles against more of a really confusing zone defense. That's what we'll run. I mean, we'll give Blake 5-yard passes if he wants, and we give him to Brady. It never works out. Mm-hmm. So I kind of wish we were a little bit more aggressive in those against better quarterbacks. But you'll see him drop into goofy cover threes, or you know they might do a cover two man. But you're going to get a lot of zone coverage, a lot of zone coverage, to where if he doesn't know where to go with the ball, he needs to pull it down or throw it away, because there's players sitting in all types of different zones. We've even gotten Tom Brady to throw a pick six in New England just a couple of weeks ago because he didn't see a zone robber. So, you know, how's Blake against the zone defense?
He has always struggled against cover two. He's a little bit better off against cover three, and that'll be where he can take advantage of the speed, because Keelan Cole is also, when you get him deep, he is a fast receiver as well. They both he and Westbrook possess a lot of speed that they can beat corners with, even when they're playing off. So I think he will fare better against a cover three. A cover two, he has never ever found success against. He especially, they'll try and design a corner. He won't be able to hit it. Your safety or whoever's dropping back there, it's going to be hard. His best option is going against crosser routes and getting those 5-yard passes that you say the Bills will let up. And if he can get his momentum going with those, then he will fare a little bit better. But if he can't get his momentum going even with those, then it's in the bag. Yeah.
They'll give it to him. And it's really funny. Like, you know, you'll see quarterbacks like Derek. I never really noticed it too much until the Bills went exclusive zone this year. They were in a 3-4 for most of with Rex Ryan and with Jim Schwartz. They played a different style of more attacking 4-3. Now under McDermott, you know, they play that Carolina real deep zones and really crazy style of patterns. But it's very simple for defensive backs from what I've heard. And, you know, they have less responsibility and more just field play. So it's really weird to see quarterbacks like Derek Carr and Alex Smith and guys that are generally, you know, especially Alex, guys that are very conservative with the ball, really struggle against certain zone coverages. Mm-hmm. So, and that's what the Bills will do to Blake. If he'll take those 5-yard passes, even to Mercedes Lewis or, you know, whoever else is, you know, able to run those quick patterns, they'll be able to take real big advantage. But if he gets impatient and says, you know, I want to go deep, and misses a safety that he didn't know was there, you know, that's really what the Bills are banking on.
Mm-hmm. That's what they want. That's what the Jaguars have wanted out of him all year. You've seen him. He will. It's almost every couple of plays you'll see that crosser, and that's supposed to be read number one for him, because that's just what he hits. He can do it. He does it well. If he does anything well, it's that he hits the crosser or he hits Mercedes Lewis in the middle of the field, like a 10-yard curl route up the seam, something like that. But at the same time, it is when pressure starts to get to his head, he will start to take those shots, and then suddenly he'll be baited into a turnover. The back-breaking turnover is what he gets baited into, and that's when you know that it's starting to slip.
Yep. Yeah, and that's it'll be funny because, you know, Jags fans or analysts even will be like, you know, why isn't he looking down the field? If Blake Bortles is taking his all day, taking his 5 to 7 to 10 yard passes, they're being successful, trust me, especially against the way this Bills defense plays. But the second you start to see throws go down the field, then all of a sudden be like, oh, there's EJ Gaines, who's notorious for being able to break on his zone defense. He's an awful man corner. He really is. He isn't a very good man corner, but he is just a really, really good zone corner. I have no idea why you can be so good at one and so poor at the other. Right. And you'll see him come out of nowhere and be like, what zone was he playing? Was he in a cover three, cover two? Where was he there? And he'll be able to break on the ball like you've never seen before. And that's what confuses quarterbacks, right?
Right.
So if he takes his 7-yard passes, the Jags should wrap it up between that. And even if Fournette's just averaging, we'll be low here, 3.5 to 4 yards a carry, that should be successful. If you stay patient against the Bills, that's where you start to see, especially either early on or late on, one or the other, where someone will try to push it. And it's not the right move against the style of defense.
I agree. I think this game's going to, all in all, end up being a lot more even than what people are calling for, unless it does have that early like momentum for one side or another. I think it's, even though, like you've said, the stats don't really show up for Buffalo, especially on defense, I think it's a better team than they're going to be getting credit for. A lot of Jags fans, I've seen it on both sides, Jags fans and Bills fans writing it off. I've seen Bills fans write it off as an easy one for Buffalo. I've seen Jacksonville do it for them. I think this is going to be really close until the end.
Yeah, what makes this a good matchup, actually, and I think it'll be enjoyable football, I hope. I hope it's not one way. I really do hope it's not one way or the other.
Yeah.
What makes it a good matchup is the way that they both play football. I don't think there's anything in Buffalo that says it'll be 31-10 Buffalo unless something really crazy happens. And the same thing for Jacksonville. I don't see anything that shows me that it'll be 31-10 Jacksonville in a real big blowout. I do think they'll both play solid enough football. The Bills play really good in the red zone defensively. So you'll settle for field goals. The Bills will end up settling for field goals. You know, it depends who makes that backbreaking interception or backbreaking fumble, which, you know, the Bills have been really poor on special teams in terms of kick coverage, and in terms of they've now allowed two onside kick recovery. So that's something to keep in mind, where our players are getting really aggressive going up and fielding the ball and fumbling it. So it's interesting. But then again, on kick, in terms of punt coverage, they don't allow punt returners to return the ball. So you'll see some solid special teams, and including a Steven Hauschka who's money from 50 plus. So you'll see some of that special teams come to play a role in this one as well. So, you know, the Bills will come in with a kicker who's able to get it done. They will actually rely on Hauschka to win them a game if they have to. Like, they'll play field goal football because they do think that they can bait quarterbacks into making mistakes, and that's even including Tom Brady, for better or for worse.
Right.
They think they'll bait him into thinking that they can make a mistake, and, you know, kind of live and die by that sword. So I think it'll be a great football game. I really do. You'll get enough of Buffalo flavor down there. I hope they're being professional and they're not still having fun, but they're not doing something stupid. Which a lot of Bills fans aren't what you see in Deadspin and other
right.
stuff.
Right.
They're really not. They're really passionate, and they just love wrestling for some weird reason. they really do, and but there's plenty of it. I mean, there's just the point is, when you go to a Bills game, you do have more player or more people tailgating than go to the game. So you'll have about 80,000 or 90,000 people, you know, having fun, cooking, drinking, maybe just, you know, hanging out with friends and family. And you're gonna have, with that atmosphere, you're gonna have even a small percentage of people lighting themselves on fire and getting thrown through a table. So hopefully they keep it professional down there. I want to see them have a good time, but I want to see them also, you know, represent their city and not do something stupid to leave Jackson, you know, leave a bad taste in Jacksonville. Oh, that's the last thing we want. So I saw you tweeting about the secondary market. Anything going on there with tickets and, you know, kind of what's the atmosphere like? You know, kind of give Bills fans a little breakdown of that.
It's been, in one way to put it, incredible. Because Jaguars fans, they haven't known what it's like to buy playoff tickets since '99. Sure. Same way with the Bills. So it was at first the first amount of tickets that went out, and I'm a season ticket holder, so I had mine a little bit before they went on the full sale. It took an
Are
hour.
Are you going the game?
I am going to be at the game. Nice. I'm very excited for it. The atmosphere is going to be great. The tickets, the stadium sold out in 1 hour and 1 minute. And after that, they did get the NFL to approve removing the tarps at the top of the stadium, opened up an additional 3,500 seats. Those sold out in 6 minutes. And then they had a couple extras go up today. I think it was like 400-some seats. It was a mix of just inventory, families holding out. The team Twitter account put out that some of the Bills inventory wasn't used. Whether that's true or not, I don't know. I don't know why the team would say it if it wasn't true. They didn't clarify any further. But those tickets, I was actually trying to go on and say, hey, I'm going to get some for either my friends or I'm going to flip them. And I went onto the site, and 9 minutes later, the tickets finally loaded after they were supposed to. And within 3 seconds, they were all gone.
What's the price for the, what was, I know what they're selling for. What was it through the Jags?
Through the Jags? They started off okay. They started at like your. I think they started. My seat was $79, and
okay.
a lot of the seats they were going from that 70. I think the most expensive upper level was probably in like the 60s. Mid bowl that wasn't any club seats were probably in like the 80s to 90s, into the low hundreds throughout before you got into the clubs. At resale, I'm pretty sure I saw the average was in the 280s.
Yeah, 280s. Some of the upper deckers are like 210 with these. What are these? Okay, I gotta ask. What are these pool seats that you guys have? Like, is that real? Like, what what are those and why do those exist?
So I have never had the money to go into any of those seats. I wish to one day have the money to afford them. It's legit. I will tell you, from what I've seen of people that have been up there, they have these cabanas, they have these tents with seats, and it gives you a good view. The pools are really cool. People enjoy them. They will literally watch the game from in there. They have a lifeguard. They keep it relatively clean. They don't let people that are really intoxicated get in there to potentially throw up in those pools.
I'm sure.
It's the cool beach atmosphere that many state that obviously stadiums don't really provide. I think what there's like a baseball stadium in Minnesota maybe that has a pool in their stadium, but otherwise you really don't see that. So it's a cool atmosphere. Fans enjoy them. They're expensive. I probably will never end up getting a seat in there. I personally enjoy sitting down at my seat below in the northeast end zone. No, in the north end zone. But at the same time, I get why people enjoy them. I would like to try it one time.
Okay, no, fair enough. And lastly, tell me about like, I do have some friends down there and some people who go to games, but they say it's relatively tame. Tell me about like the pregame atmosphere. Is there anything going on around the stadium? Generally, we're not talking, you know, could be different for the playoff game, but what's generally happening, you know, at 9 a.m. on a game day?
9 a.m. is when the traffic starts to get bad, and I'm sure that's normal everywhere. At the same time, where the stadium is put at, it's just not great in terms of traffic flow. They can't seem to ever get it down to a T. Not a ton of stadium parking. You have to rely on people that have opened up either their tailgate lots or people will open up their yards, and you can buy cheap parking at those yards, but at the same time, it's not great for traffic. At that point, they have a lot of big tailgates set up around the area. There's this one great group that I'm actually a part of called Bold City Brigade. They mix it up with another tailgating group called Teal Street Hooligans, and they throw this tailgate that it does get up to about 500 some people.
Nice.
It's
where does that take place for anyone listening, like Jags or anybody? Where do you do that?
So any Jags fans listening that would like to go, it is at the corner of Duval and Bryan Street, right in between the Hart and the Matthews bridges coming from the Commodore Expressway and the Arlington Expressway that all come in from like the beach area. So all coming from there. It's a great atmosphere. It's free. I mean, the parking, obviously, I think it'll cost $30 this week because they've upped the prices for parking.
Of course.
Which really sucks, but it's whatever. But the tailgate is free. It's a great atmosphere. Everyone's really welcoming. Any fan that comes through of the opposing team will get shunned. Like the MC will say, hey, boo this man. And everyone will go crazy about it. But all in all, it is a relatively welcoming group. Jags Twitter might suggest otherwise, but when you're actually there, like getting to know the people, they're all good people.
Good. Yeah, no, that's good to hear. I'm sure as much as the game's very important, and you know, for many years, the Bills have had to rely on tailgating to get them through. So I'm sure you'll see some professional tailgaters down there. And that's not people that just get slammed through tables, seriously. that's people that enjoy the atmosphere, that enjoy what's going on, whether it's other teams' fans or whatever. You know, playing up here in the Northeast, we're very used to having a lot of other teams' fans. You know, we're actually the only stadium in New York, so we'll get a lot of people prefer to come to Buffalo over down to New Jersey to watch the Jets. So you'll get a lot of people, you know, from the northern PA area, from, you know, Erie, you know, you got people from Ontario. So we're used to, you know, a lot of different types of fans coming to games. So hopefully they come down there and keep it respectful, find a fun lot, you know, kind of, you know, really, I'm interested to see how many show up. I don't know. I have no idea. I've been hearing that it could be a ton, but I don't know that. So I'm interested.
I've seen a lot of Buffalo fans on there, and I'm sure these are the ones that are more just there to trash talk. And they're saying, oh, this stadium is going to be 50-50. And it's the total, like, Jags attendance joke. Those don't bother me anymore. I get it, because up until a couple weeks ago, the attendance still really was not good. It's been sellout for the past couple games, which has been great. But the Jags attendance has never been good. I do think that there will be a lot of Bills fans there. I could see it getting to about 10,000, and that's solid. Now, the thing is, Seattle came, and they brought about 7,000 to 8,000, and for being the 12th man, their performance was mediocre. They weren't too loud. I think Jaguars fans, although the numbers aren't always high, they have been more recently, but even when they're not that high, if the team's given them a reason to cheer, they will get loud.
That's good. That's good to know. Yeah, I mean, that's interesting that someone like Seattle, who we like to compete with for loudness, didn't go down there and put on a good performance. So that's good. I'm glad that they struggled. Maybe that was more of their like regional fans, as there are really raucous there up there. So, so it must have been the regional fans. But I think, at least for this playoff game, you're going to get a lot of the Bills' best fans in terms of loudness, funness, that kind of thing. So I'm just really interested in the scene. I'm just really interested. It's a Sunday at 1:05 game. That's normal game time for everybody, so we're all in the groove. I'm sure much for Jacksonville, that's generally the time you guys play as well. So it'll be fun. I think it'll be a really good atmosphere. It'll be two teams that generally aren't here often. And one of them is going to pull away with a win, and you know, and neither of them have had a playoff win in, you know, since the 90s. So, so it is, someone's going to break that barrier too, as not just with their playoff droughts. What the Jacksonville reached nine, right? Was it nine? 10?
Jacksonville.
What was their draft route?
I think that they won. They beat Pittsburgh in 2007. So that was, I guess 10 years ago. But besides that, they haven't actually played or won a home game since it was 99. Right around the same time as the Bills. Yeah.
Yep. Okay. So there they are, both sitting right there at that weird 99 season.
Exactly.
So it comes full circle for everybody. So I think it'll be a good game. I mean, I think it'll be fun. I think for both teams' sake, I think they'll put on a better game than the NFL / other teams are thinking. But guess what? You know, while Baltimore's sitting at home watching, while LA sitting at home watching, and Dallas, you know, got to watch Jacksonville and Buffalo, right?
Exactly. Do you have any final score prediction for us?
A final score prediction. I do think it'll be a fairly low scoring game. I just don't see it being, you know, really high either way. I do have a 21-20 Jacksonville win, but that's me predicting no crazy Blake Bortles stuff or anything bad going on. I'm not going to predict that to happen. So I think it's a 21-20, but that's being a fairly, you know, good game with a fairly basic prediction.
Yeah, I was thinking right around the same thing. I was thinking not too high scoring, maybe Jacksonville 24, Buffalo 20, two field goals from Hauschka.
That'll happen.
He is good. I'm glad Jacksonville finally replaced Jason Myers with a guy that won't kill it from 50 plus, but he's accurate from everything in Josh Lambeau. He's been great, and he's a great personality too. So I'm glad both teams, if they have anything really figured out, is that they've got their kickers who they like.
and I guess what we forgot to do, and you know, real quickly, we'll turn it to you because you know we're done here on my end. Tell me about Marone now in Jacksonville. What's he doing? You know, how's the opinion of him? And you know, so you said you have a kicker that doesn't, you know, kick 50 plus or kick it well. What will you guys do down there, you know, when it's 4th and 3 from the 40? You know, kind of talk a little bit of Marone and a little bit about that, and I think that should be a good place to wrap it up.
Marone has been cool here. We haven't seen too much of an ego out of him, which I was actually anticipating. I wanted them to give him a shot when they were trying to – I wanted them to fire Bradley earlier and just give Marone the season, but – regardless, he has the calls now, and he's done a good job. I haven't seen much of the ego. We really like the fact that he enjoys bologna. I don't know if you saw the bologna thing. They now have a special in the stadium, and Jacksonville has terrible food services inside the stadium. I can't recommend most of the concessions. If you do want to get one thing when you're in that stadium, go find a food cart. It's not one of the big concessions. It's just smaller carts. They have them throughout the concourse. They will serve you an artisan bread, bologna, and cheese, like fried sandwich, called the Maroni Bologna. It is $6. It's not only the highest quality food in the stadium, but it's also the cheapest. You can get a really, really terrible quality burger for like $9 in there, but you can get this sandwich and it'll fill you up for $6. So
now, is the bologna thing like, does he actually like it?
Oh, he loves it. Okay. It was the National Hot Dog and Sausage Council actually reached out to the team when they realized that he liked bologna. He had talked about it in a press. I don't know how it even got brought up, to be honest. It just somehow got out there. And they were like, okay, well, we're going to endorse the Jaguars with this because we think this is cool. And they donated, I think it was 350 pounds worth of bologna to the Jaguars. And Marone and the team said, we're going to donate this to the homeless shelters in the area, except for the 18, I believe it was 18 pounds that, or maybe it was 9. It's something divisible, one or the other. Well, regardless, Marone kept a lot of the bologna for himself.
That's funny.
Which the team just said, yeah, this is your thing, take the bologna. But the rest they decided to donate, which was a really cool thing. But so that's kind of Marone's thing. We like what he does where he seems to be ruthless in a sense where, like the fake punts they run. They're 3 for 3 on fake punts, and all of them were in situations where they didn't need to run a fake punt. But whether they were holding a lead or whether it was close, but it was just like, why are you doing it? And then it was like, oh, this is successful. This is great. We love it. Where it's been two snaps to Corey Grant, and then one was Brad Nortman actually connected with James O'Shaughnessy on a relatively well-thrown ball from a punter who's never thrown it before. So all in all, I think Marone brings that run-heavy game plan that Jacksonville hasn't seen since its days of Fred Taylor and Maurice Jones-Drew, Jimmy Stewart back in the day, or James Stewart back in the day, for that matter, which fans like. They like the old-style type of running game. I haven't seen the ego that I expected. So all in all, he's been great. Nate Hackett's been meh. He's been he's been meh. He's had his games.
I would be shocked if you told me somehow he turned that around. He was not a very good coordinator. So I'm hoping he figured out a little bit. But he was like, Marone was always bound to him. And I was like, I think Marone would have actually gotten a lot of props if he found another offensive coordinator that he could like hitch his hat to. But we'll always, I think he'll always be there, man. Unless he really, really bombs it, you're going to need it. So I don't know.
I was waiting to hear if Hackett could have taken a college job this year, maybe as a head coach, and got the chance if teams were like, oh, wow, Blake Bortles, if you look at his stats, they weren't terrible. We want Nate Hackett, because I would have taken an upgrade over Hackett. He's been he's developed solid plans to make Blake not look that bad, and in fact, in some parts look good. And the run game has been relatively successful. At the same time, there's a lot of games where he makes zero adjustments, and against the Chargers, that the offense wasn't working. And there was a point where it was like, why are you still trying to run the ball when Blake has actually made a couple nice throws throughout the day? Like, why don't you try and rely on it? And it wasn't that he made that adjustment at halftime, but he made it in like the late third quarter, and it was already that uneasy feeling like this is too late. Like, the Chargers are about to mount this and win this game. And the Jags ended up pulling it off. It was scary, and it had to go to overtime. But at the same time, it's just Hackett confuses me, and I would definitely take an upgrade if it were available.
And it could be with the coaching moves and a lot of different things going on. And I think you could see if – I don't know that Marone will ever make that move, but I think you should have some options available for you, and so should the Bills, as Rick Dennison's pretty similar. Like, we're in the same boat with him. So you can trust me there. Most people love Leslie Frazier, a defensive coordinator. If he doesn't see another head – I think after next season, if the Bills continue to progress, what he's done with the D-backs have been crazy. So you could see some head coaching opportunities go back to him at some point in Leslie Frazier. But that's good to know. I mean, that's something Bills fans will be interested to hear about, was Marone, and, you know, kind of your opinion so far on him. And is he still being conservative?
A little bit. He is a little bit. I'm curious to see where he goes in a second season here. Because I mean, we saw that with the second season in Buffalo. So when if he's given more of that chance to become egotistical, I could get worried about it. Coughlin is also here, in which case Coughlin, he's not been as much in charge of the roster moves or anything, but he is the culture. And whether if Marone has an ego thing, it's we don't see it because Coughlin has shut him up.
Okay. Mm-hmm. No, that's good. No, yeah. It could be a good combination. It could be a great combination. Where he needed someone over him, you know, for that. You know, Ralph Wilson, when he was here, was not. There was no one really over Doug Marone here, so I think he might have gotten that ego. Pretty much controlled Doug Whaley, who's actually being looked at now for the Packers general manager job. But so I think that Doug kind of ran with a bigger head, realized he could get more money by leaving, take another head coaching job, and or at least offensive coordinator. And he did it, and now he's in a spot where he says he's in a good spot. So, you know, good for him. I'm glad, you know, this Jags-Bills matchup. I'd much rather get this Jags-Bills matchup than just having to play freaking Baltimore or Pittsburgh.
Right. Yeah.
Which one of us will have to do next week anyways, but.
And I'm a little more afraid of Jacksonville going into Pittsburgh this time than they did last time. This Pittsburgh team is not is not the five interception Ben Roethlisberger.
Yeah, same year where the Bills went to Arrowhead and won against Kansas City. So a lot of people were like, you know what, we'll take our chances with Jacksonville. We'll see what happens. But we don't want to go into Arrowhead again because we already went into Arrowhead and won. So So that's something to keep in mind. The Bills do have a couple of key wins. They went into Atlanta and won, went into Kansas City and won. So went into New England, played really well. So you know, tied up during the third quarter. So there's a couple of those, and then you'll get those big stinkers. So hopefully we get a good game here, man. I really appreciate your time. These crossover shows are great, and they'll be really good for Bills fans as we don't, you know, get a lot of meaningful Bills Jacksonville football. Hopefully maybe going down the road we will.
I hope so. This suddenly become a little bit of a rivalry if Doug Marrone's here for a long time.
It could, starting with this game. Unfortunately, it's only a wild card game, but I think it could start it. I think if Jacksonville stays good in their defense and the Bills keep growing with their defense, another good secondary in both of them, I think you could see slight rivalry. I think they play next year too, so that should be good.
Yeah. I think that, I don't know if it's here or it, I'm trying to. I think it will be in Jacksonville next year because the Jaguars played the Jets here this year, and they do take on the AFC East next year. They do travel to Miami. New England's here. I do think Buffalo will be back again next year. So, but Bills Mafia might be traveling yet again to Jacksonville.
Yeah. I think so. It'll be fun. Because we play. It says right here. Well, I think at Indy. At Baltimore, at Jets. I think we definitely play at. This is saying the Bills are home. This is saying the Bills are home, but we'll see.
Are home?
Yeah, it says it's in Orchard Park, so I don't know if that's.
One way or another, we'll figure it out. But
yeah, it was fun, man. Thanks a lot for your time. These are great shows, and I know. Lastly, you know, today here, we did want to mention, you know, sponsor of Locked On here at MyBookie. So get on there, MyBookie 50% promo. Give it a run. You know. Betting, you know, where you're betting is just as important on who you're betting on. This could be one of those great lines. Do you think Jacksonville will hold that, that 8 or 9 point line? Go ahead and get on there, MyBookie, MyBookie.ag. Use promo code LOCKEDON, you know, for 50% bonus. So really appreciate the time today.
Yeah, man, appreciate having you on.
Thank you. We'll look forward to it.
Yeah, that's right. All right, then we will go ahead and sign off. Be sure to check out, obviously, check out the Locked On Bills handle as well as the Locked On Jaguars. It's going to be a lot more content coming your way over the next couple days as we get ready for Wild Card Weekend.